It is now time for Theoretical Tea and Company with Professor Janice Collins. So please, sit right back and enjoy a sip of knowledge right here on HitMix 88.9 WEIU, here for you.
Good afternoon and welcome to Theoretical Tea and Company. So glad you all could be with me again this weekend. We will have this show, and we will have another show at the end of the month, the last Sunday of the month, so be sure to tune in for that show as well. But here we are today, and once again, I'm bringing a subject to you that I'd like for you to join in on the conversation, but I think it's one of those conversations that has to be done and needs to be done, just like the bully conversations that we've had thus far in recent programming. Today, we're going to talk about, is there such a thing as healthy dating habits among college students? Is that possible? A lot of times we've talked about bullying. We've talked about, in a number of different ways, directly and indirectly, we've talked about date rape. We've talked about HIV/AIDS. We've talked about the issues of power. A lot of these elements you find right in the area, in the forum, in the social scenes of campus living among young people. The reason why I think it's extremely important, not just because it's Teen Dating Violence Month, which I think is really wonderful, but on a daily and weekly basis, students have to deal with peer pressure. They have to deal with alcohol, drugs, a need to belong, a need to be a part of a group, and that can really, really provide a breeding ground for really wonderful relationships, but also a breeding ground for dysfunctional, unhealthy relationships. What does that mean? And can we do anything about it? Before I introduce you to our guests that are going to help us discuss this issue, I'd like to point out a couple of things as far as stats. According to the CDC website and their stats in the database, 1 in 10 teens in the past 12 months, 1 in 10 teens report being hit or physically hurt on purpose by a boyfriend or girlfriend at least once. Victims of teen dating violence are more likely to do poorly in school, report binge drinking, suicide attempts, physical fighting, and current sexual activity. And teens who perpetrate dating violence may also carry these patterns of violence into future relationships. I don't think that's hard for us to believe or understand. We can see it in the news reports where college students are killing one another at a time of rage that is or isn't infused by by an outside source of some type of drug or alcohol. Sometimes it's not that. Sometimes there's jealousy, there's envy, there's a lot of things that are going on. We're going to talk about some of that. But most importantly, we're going to talk about some solutions today. A couple other stats before I introduce my guests. And the last reported database, again from the CDC, on sexual violence, 10.6% of women reported experiencing forced sex at some time in their lives. 2.1% of men reported experiencing forced sex at some time in their lives. And 2.5% of women surveyed and 0.9% of men surveyed said they experienced unwanted sexual activity in the previous 12 months. And when you think about gender and you think about masculinity, it really is enlightening. And I think it's important to include men in these stats because we think that men are not assaulted sexually by women or not sexually assaulted by men. That's now coming out and is emerging more in our databases, but it has been occurring for as long as we could probably remember. And I'm glad that it's now getting reported and men are actually having a face here. 20% to 25% of women in college reported experiencing an attempted or a completed rape in college. And then finally, children and youth 17 years or younger, 60.4% of female and 69.2% of male victims were first raped before age 18. So there were some of the reasons why we're talking about this today, because it does occur. But there are ways to have healthy relationships, wonderful relationships, even on college, I pose to you. To help discuss this issue and to help bring some wonderful information, needed information. I have three guests with me in the studio today here on the campus of Eastern Illinois University. I have Katie McCarthy, who is the Assistant Director, EIU Counseling Center, and it's her fourth year here at Eastern. And she, on a regular basis, meets with students at the Counseling Center about relationship issues, mood concerns, anxiety, and conflict with friends or family. She also coordinates EIU's Sexual Assault Prevention Task Force, and she received her MSW from Boston College. Good afternoon, Katie.
Thank you.
Finally, we also have Erin Walters, the Executive Director of the Sexual Assault Counseling and Information Service, better known as SACIS, an EIU alum as well with a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in clinical counseling. Being a native of Charleston, she has a very deep connection with the community here, which increases her desire to put an end to sexual violence. Good afternoon, Erin.
Good afternoon.
And then finally, I'm happy to bring to our discussion a student who has agreed to talk with us about a couple of things that she too has an opinion about. This is Diana Marie Hernandez, who is a senior psychology major with a women's studies minor and graduating this spring. Congratulations. Wonderful.
Thank you.
She is also an intern at Hope of East Central Illinois. Diana, welcome.
Thank you.
It is, let's get this conversation started. For the individuals, I see you all on Facebook. You can post your comments and statements and questions on Facebook. I'll try to get those on air. And also, feel free to call in at 217-581-6116 for the local and for the individuals outside of the state of Illinois. Listening live stream, 217-581-6116. Okay. So we know the bad news. We know the bad news. We don't even have to watch news to know the bad news. We know the bad news in our own personal lives, in our own lives where we hear of other people talking down to other people, condescending. We hear about abuse in our jobs, in our personal lives. So here we are on a campus, and there are a lot of students here, and there are a lot of things that happen out in the world, all happening right on any campus, on any campus. Is there such a thing as having a healthy relationship with a significant other on college campuses? I'll pose that question first. Is there, and you can answer it however you want. Am I asking the right question?
I think you're asking the right question, and I think it absolutely is a possibility to have a healthy relationship. I think that the gray area falls in when people are not recognizing the unhealthy characteristics as they begin to form.
Okay.
Because I can testify to my own healthy relationship that was born on a college campus, this college campus.
Okay.
However, you know, based on my own experience and experience of friends and loved ones, some people don't recognize the unhealthy characteristics as they come.
Mm-hmm.
And as they begin to form within the relationship, they stick with it and have an idea that, well, I can change this person. Oh, well, this will pass. Or, you know, and they try and hang with that person and try and be the person to make the change,
mm-hmm.
Only not realizing that maybe the unhealthy characteristics are building and growing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that can lead down the wrong path.
Okay.
But I think the healthy relationship is absolutely a possibility.
Okay. And so what I'd like to do then is ask each one. Erin, thank you so much for that.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie, I'm going to ask you the same question. And Diana, I'm going to ask you the same question and get your feedback on that. Then we're going to talk about what's unhealthy.
Sure.
How do you recognize the unhealthy signs that maybe this is not the way to go? And if it's unhealthy, is it something that you stick with and try to work it out?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something that you say, it's time to go? Because there are... You know, a lot of people say, oh, this is unhealthy, it's bad for me, but actually maybe something you need to work on. It's
mm-hmm.
not bad. I don't really know.
Sure.
So, Katie, is
yes.
there such thing as having a healthy relationship? And I know that you have experience both with, as well professionally and on campus and off campus, so however you want to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think it's definitely possible. I think it was so helpful that you brought up the issues of alcohol and trying to belong, drugs, because what's particularly challenging of having a relationship as a college student or a teenager is you're not just trying to do school and figure yourself out socially, but you have this developmental task of trying to figure out who you are. Mm-hmm. And so I think often relationships happening at this stage, which is normal and healthy, but you can really grow around each other. And so learning to make sure that you're also growing true to who you are, mm-hmm. I think can make it more likely to be more healthy instead of only maybe just accommodating too much to the person you're kind of growing up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we can have a lot of examples of that is not campus at all. Okay, I'm going to try not to feel like I'm in therapy here while I'm doing the radio program. But can I talk about my problems? No, seriously. Diana, you're a student. Here you are on the campus of Eastern Illinois University, about to graduate. 4 years in, is there such a thing as having a healthy relationship?
Yes, I think there is. A healthy relationship, it could be possible, but there needs to be communication within the relationship. And also, kind of like what Aaron was saying, you need to recognize what is unhealthy. And I think sometimes that the unhealthy and the healthy traits of a relationship get mixed up. Mm-hmm. Like for jealousy, for instance, like some people see that as a positive thing. Oh, well, he's jealous, so that means he loves me. But jealousy isn't part of a healthy relationship. So,
okay. So, is there any such thing? Is there such thing as a healthy jealousy trait? Anybody can answer that.
I think in the very beginning of a relationship, that's when it seems flattering to some, and I think there's, you know, at the getting to know someone, you're trying to build trust. Trust doesn't happen overnight. So gradually you're trying to build trust with that person. You're seeing maybe that other people are interested or that the partner has different friendships that they're getting familiar with. So I think there is a level of jealousy that can be appropriate, mm-hmm. you know, at least getting to know. Mm-hmm. But there are lines that you can't cross with that kind of jealousy, because sometimes that turns into a more controlling type mm-hmm. of jealousy. Mm-hmm. But I think most of the time, at the very beginning, in my experience in working with people, they see that maybe as somewhat flattering. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're jealous. They're wondering about who I'm with or where I'm going. But when that progresses and becomes more controlling, that's absolutely an unhealthy characteristic.
Okay, so that's, we're talking about the bad characteristics. Let's move to that then. What are some of the signs, warning signs, that should go up like a bell and tell us, maybe if we don't hear it the first time it rings, but maybe we'll hear it the next time. Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the, especially for college campuses and students and dealing with that, tell me, because I know a lot of times they may even know they're in a bad relationship, but because it's who they are in a relationship with, who is very popular, good looking, or whatever, you know, and they have this low self-esteem and they still want to belong to someone, so they don't want to let go of the relationship, then they feel alone, and then it's that whole thing. So, you know, we have different variations of that. But what are some of the pinpointed aspects of unhealthy habits or signals or characteristics that you might want to take a second look at?
I think it really starts, you know, at baseline with basic safety and respect.
Okay, Katie.
If you're being harmed in any way physically, if you're being forced to do things that you don't want to do, you know, before all else, there has to be enough respect that your partner isn't going to be putting you in that situation or doing that to you. Okay. So I think that's certainly kind of basic line, important piece to think of. But it's also, it goes on a spectrum. So even if you're not being physically harmed, but you're not feeling respected in some other ways, mm-hmm. I think that's very important to be paying close attention to.
Okay. And so when you say that being forced to do something that you don't want to do, when I think about college students as a professor, we may tell them to do something that they just need to do for the class. Mm-hmm. Even in a relationship, you may say, even when it's a matter of respect, and say, you know what, I think you need to talk to me differently. Okay. Some people won't feel comfortable in making that judgment and saying, how do I know I'm asking for someone, you're making me do something I don't want to do, is that abusive? Just because I don't want to do it? Mm-hmm. Or is it they're making you do something that goes against something? You know, I feel like there has to be something there for some people to say, well, you need to call me at 5 o'clock because by 5 o'clock I'm cooking or whatever. Because a lot of what I see mimicked here on campus, a lot of people are trying to have relationships like marriages and we're living together and significant others and that sort of thing. So, you know, they can say, oh, she's making me come home at 5 or doing this or he's making me do this or whatever. It's something that I don't want to do. But they may see that as abusive, and it really is it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, these are young minds, so they're trying to figure it out. So how can they figure it out? Is it something that's in your gut that says, I just don't feel good about myself?
Well,
how do they gauge that?
I think there are some clear boundary issues that need to be established.
Okay.
And I think that if your partner, if there's a lack of equality within the relationship and one person has more power over the other, then these requests, these what seem like little requests, if they're coming more often and becoming more invasive, well, then they're crossing a line and there's inequality within the relationship.
Okay.
I think that if there's ever a situation in which they're the partner is asking you to do something that you don't want to do, but yet it's not hurting you,
mm-hmm.
you know, is that a compromise issue?
Right.
Or is that an issue in which they're maybe imposing some force or some power and making demands?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a difference right. between a request and a demand,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
there's a difference between a request and entitlement, you know. And I think when entitlement becomes involved, you're looking at an imbalance of power.
Mm-hmm.
When it starts to feel invasive, when it starts to make you feel bad about yourself and the decisions you're making,
mm-hmm.
then you're gearing towards the unhealthy stages. If it's not hurtful or harmful to you, but is more of a compromise you just didn't really feel like making, that may not be a unhealthy characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
Are you coming home? I'm going to start cooking at 5. Will you give me a call?
Mm-hmm.
Is that hurtful to me if I do make that call? Or is that maybe more of a compromise or respect for the other person's time and effort?
Okay. And Diana, let me ask you. I think this is some great points that you both brought up. I'm Katie and Aaron. But Diana, let me ask you, from being in that peer group, there on campus, do you see some of the give and take with in certain relationships? Do you see the compromises, or do you see power issues? I think power, as both Katie and Aaron have already alluded to, power is huge when you think about abusive relationships in the aspect. Do you see issues of power in your peer group?
I definitely have seen issues of power, and I've also seen compromise as well. And I think that the individual, his or herself, need to let me see, how should I put this?
The individual is it related more to what Aaron was saying and looking at how it makes me feel? Because sometimes
mm-hmm.
you get to the point, whether it's good or bad, if I don't feel good about myself at the end of the day, maybe I don't need to be in this relationship.
Right. Yes. Yeah, the individual really needs to just establish boundaries and really communicate with his or her partner on if they feel uncomfortable with anything they're asking. Really, I think they should talk about it and try to establish, you know, is this, you know, something about power, or is it something that I really need to compromise with?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, and I think it's crucial about boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so many times boundaries are not respected.
Not only that, maybe not even asserted.
Yes. Do they even know they have boundaries?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Talk about that. How do you create boundaries? This is for the listener who's out there and they're or watching on the closed circuit television set here. This is someone who said, I have no idea what you're talking about as far as boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had boundaries in my family. And how do I even do that? How do I establish boundaries? What is that, and how do I establish it?
There's our another whole question, right? but vitally important. I talk about boundaries all day long.
Okay.
I think to some degree it's physical boundaries. You know, I think as we're determining, you know, harmful versus not, yes, in every relationship, you're absolutely right. Sometimes we have to do things we don't really want to,
mm-hmm.
but it's not necessarily harmful.
Right.
and that falls under the compromises my colleagues were discussing. But for boundaries, some of it's identifying, you know, you have a right to your own physical body. You don't have a right to harm someone else, but you do have a right to what happens for yourself.
Right.
And some of it is trying to assertively recognize that or assertively speak up for yourself, or identifying with other resources when you need other people maybe to help you recognize, mm-hmm. you know, do I have a right to speak up for this? Do I not? Having some trusted friends maybe. I think often we can see much more clearly other people's unhealthy relationships rather than our own. And I sometimes think unhealthy relationships are harder to get out of than healthy relationships.
Why is that? Why is that, Katie?
Because to some degree, and this is, you know, talking quite broadly, I mean, unhealthy relationships can have a whole spectrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, there's some ways we've agreed to this dynamic with our partner where, okay, sometimes I'll let you have this part of me, or I'll accommodate to you in some way that I'm not really comfortable with, or I don't really feel respected. It can kind of play with our minds, you know, because whether the other person intends it or not, there can be some manipulation that happens. Or, you know, when we behave in a certain way, act all nice, ignore what we really need for ourselves, then we get positive feedback from the other person.
Okay.
So, you know, I'll keep working in that way, and it you know, it can be a bit of a cycle where we have a harder time identifying, no, this is separate from who I am. How do I go after what I need for myself?
Okay. Erin?
I think it's difficult, too, for individuals to understand that boundaries are not fixated, because you can have a boundary one day and it changed the next, and you have that right.
Okay.
So when we're just speaking of physical boundaries, if you're in a relationship where there's sexual interaction and that has been kind of a standard, but yet one of the two partners feels uncomfortable with that, or it's gotten to a point where they're uncomfortable, I think sometimes individuals don't feel like they can change back or revert to a previous boundary, or have the right to say, no, you know, I'm not comfortable with that, you know. It got to a certain point. I thought I was okay with it. I'm really not.
But you said you were.
But I'm really not.
And that should continue to do that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because boundaries are, you know, it's not about entitlement. You know, once I've gotten to this point, I'm entitled to be at this point every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we're talking maybe sexual activity or beyond sexual activity, whatever the boundary is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about entitlement for the other person to say, well, you know, you've already said that this is okay, so I should be able to, you know, be sexual in a way that I feel like, you know. So I think boundaries are sort of fluid. They ebb and flow, and people have a right to assert different boundaries from one day to the next.
Okay.
People have a right to consent or not consent from one day to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And consent, according to the law, can be withdrawn at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that, too, we see in situations that we work with, that people are not aware that even consent can be withdrawn at any
They're
time.
They're not aware, right?
They're not aware.
They're not aware that they have that right.
Right.
Well, they are aware now, if you're listening.
Right, absolutely.
You have that right. And, Diana, let me ask you, when we're talking about this entitlement and the issue of boundary, what I hear a lot of on many campuses and just discussion as I'm understand students, when professors are walking through the hall, we're actually listening, even though we're not part of the conversation. So some of the conversations that I've heard in passing, also being a journalist, that does help. But also at a period in time, I got out of television and started working at a children's home and I was there for 4 days a week bringing up young ladies to the age of 18, helping them find their way. And when we talk about boundaries and entitlement, one of the things that I heard prevalently is that once we become girlfriend and boyfriend, and I'm going to include individuals of other sexual orientation, lesbian, bisexual, whatever the case may be, once I have a significant other, I am entitled to your body.
Mm-hmm.
And not only am I entitled to your body, but you have no right to deny me. And especially because, yeah, we were drinking, but you knew what you were doing. And so don't act like you weren't. They have this whole, and it is real pressure. Because immediately, if you do stand up for yourself, you can be ostracized, not just from your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your significant other, from everyone in that group that you used to belong to. What then? You're a psychology major. I'm sure you've read a lot about it. You've pulled in other experiences that you've seen and heard. What about that issue of entitlement and boundaries among young people?
Well, I think even if you are in a relationship, there definitely are boundaries, and you need to decide what makes you comfortable and what makes you uncomfortable. And I don't think that just because you're in a relationship that your body does belong to the other person. It's your body. You do what you want with it. You decide what's comfortable for you and what's not comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And just if there's something that does make you uncomfortable, say it. Mm-hmm. And I know there is, like you said, like peer pressure and the idea of being ostracized.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to do what is going to make you feel comfortable.
Okay. And let's say they do say it. I know that when I did the town hall meeting on bullies and I got the evaluations back and individuals wrote that there's a question there. What would you like covered that wasn't covered? And part of it was rape, date rape, also relationship rape. Because you do fight back sometimes and you say no and you're raped, no and you're beat, no and I'm ashamed and where can I go? It's like I was saying in one of the other shows, it's really easy for us to say there's a counseling center right here on campus. It's easy for us to say in the community there's a place called Hope, there's a place called SACUS, there's the police department. But God, you got to first get up and be able to have that courage to do it. And it is not the easiest thing to do. So what would you tell that person who is, they want to do it, but it is really a psychological prison
mm-hmm.
that they, you know, but that's part of the unhealthy relationship is what you're saying, that mm-hmm. you actually have built this fort around you that people can't get to you and you can't get to them. So what would you say to the young person or to someone who's in there who, somehow, where do you even find this courage? A lot of people don't get it until after they've been beaten and they start to get disfigured or somebody else pulls them out. Is it important, just like bullying, to just go and tell someone? Or because you talk about trust in your notes and you talk about trust as well. And how would you do that? How would you advise them?
I would certainly hope that I know it can be greatly difficult to reach out to anyone, but to not be in it alone is vitally important. And I think it's worth noting that anyone could get into a severely unhealthy relationship. People don't, you can't always tell as you're getting to know someone how much they can respect you or not. People, you know, I've heard it 1,000 times, people changing while you're in a relationship with mm-hmm. the person. Mm-hmm. So it can happen to anybody. There's no, you know, we're human beings, we feel shame, but you do not have to feel shame about that. Mm-hmm. That could happen to anybody. So if it's possible, I would encourage people to reach out to someone that they could trust, maybe a little bit out of the zone of people they're usually interacting with if no one else is recognizing this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, changes can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay,
and
thank you, Katie.
And also, in terms of how to reach out for help, you do have these agencies, these entities on campus, in the community. We have hotlines mm-hmm. where if you don't know who to talk to, you don't think someone would understand, you're not ready to walk through the door of the counseling center on Eastern's campus or mm-hmm. a SACUS on Eastern's campus, where do you go? What do you do? Well, maybe pick up a phone and the first step might be a hotline call, an anonymous call that says, this is what happened to me. I feel alone. I feel isolated. Whatever those feelings might be, you have someone on the mm-hmm. other end who can listen to you, can provide resources, can mm-hmm. give feedback. Validate your feelings because one of the aspects of the unhealthy relationship is the isolation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I don't want you to have friends because that's then right. they'll call me out on what I'm doing wrong in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you might, you know, be more apt to leave the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So for the abuser, it's in my best interest to isolate you from any friends, any family, any support system,
mm-hmm.
any faculty member that might be supportive of you. You know, that's not working for the offender.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may feel alone.
Is there
But there are people out there in your very same situation wondering, where do I go? Who do I talk to? Mm-hmm. You're not alone. Mm-hmm. There is someone out there who understands the dynamics mm-hmm. of these unhealthy relationships and would want it to be there for you.
Okay.
The one thing Katie said is it can happen to anyone, and that is absolutely true. In terms of an unhealthy relationship, you don't walk up to someone and they don't greet you with a slap in the face. They don't mm-hmm. greet you with disrespectful language, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That happens over time. Mm-hmm. You're in a situation where someone has to groom you first.
Sure.
They have to pull you in, mm-hmm. Make sure your feet are firmly planted mm-hmm. before they begin treating with less respect, okay. Harmful behavior, harmful words.
Okay. I want to talk about a couple of things. One, I'm going to say real quickly about boundaries. But before I do that, I would just want to remind everyone, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Theoretical Tea and Company. We're talking about healthy dating habits, which we're getting to the other side of that, where we're going to say, okay, this is what you should do, and this is what's going on. We're going to concentrate a lot more on that. With me to help in this discussion, I have Katie McCarthy, Assistant Director of EIU Counseling Center in the fourth year at Eastern. And then I also have Aaron Walters, the Executive Director of the Sexual Assault Counseling and Information Service, known as SACIS, and the student representative, a senior psychology major with a women's studies minor, is Diana Marie Hernandez. So, Diana, I'm going to come to you. But before I do that, I wanted to ask you, Aaron, is there a hotline for individuals who are out there right now who are on campus or off campus? And so I'll ask you that second. Is there a number? Is there a line? Is there a website that they can go to right now so they can write that down? Can you help us with that?
Absolutely. SACIS, the Sexual Assault Counseling and Information Service, we're located on campus, but we serve Coles, Cumberland, and parts of Clark County. We have a hotline number. Our hotline is 1-888-345-2846. You can access the hotline on the hours in which our office is closed by calling our regular office as well, which is 348-5033. And our services are available to the community members and the college students as well. Okay. And I know Katie has a hotline as well.
Okay, Katie.
Yes, Eastern's Counseling Center After Hours Emergency phone number is 217-549-6483, available for all students. And we also encourage, if you have a concern about a friend, you know, you could always use us for a consultation also. And during the weekday hours, our number is 217-581-3413.
Okay. And I'm going to repeat those numbers again at the end of the show. So if you didn't get those, for yourself or for somebody else, and it doesn't have to just be a student, as you can see, as you've heard, it can be for anyone, just to kind of get out there. You're not alone, and you're not by yourself. I don't want you to know that. Speaking of the hotline numbers and the websites and things along those lines, Diana, I am going to put you on the spot again, and because I'm coming to you as a psychology major, women's studies, but also as a student representative here. Mm-hmm. When I think about student, I think about problems, I think about Facebook. I think about social media. How do you think social media has played a role, or does it play a role in actually when they say, don't go through it alone? It is a great place to find a number of people to come to gather with and have momentum in a bad way, but also we're talking about good ways too. Do you think social media has helped college campus students in relating to one another across the globe? When it comes to talking about abuse and talking about relationships, unhealthy relationships and good relationships?
Yes, I think there could be. I know there are groups that you could get into on Facebook, and these groups are for people that are in the same situation for you. I'm sure you could find one, like, just through the search, mm-hmm. and really just relate to other people that are in different states, mm-hmm. in different countries even, that are going through the same problems as you, and get support from them, and also they could help you, like, with their own experiences and tell you what they did, just to kind of guide you along with maybe what you could do to make your relationship more healthy.
So you think that when it comes to social media, that it's actually helped your generation when it comes to issues like this, do you think?
In a way, yes. There are definitely some negatives, but I think that it has helped because you can reach out to more people than you would just by telephone.
Okay. That's great. And speaking of telephone, if you'd like to call in with a question or a statement or a comment, you don't have to identify yourself. The number is 217-581-6116, 581-6116. I wanted to quickly get back to the boundary issue. Thank you, Diana. I want to throw something out here before we move to the examples of good relationships. So far, we've talked about balance and mutual respect and your personal health and issues of power and that sort of thing. I want to get to how to recognize a good relationship that you're in. And this can be not just a relationship between someone that you have an intimate relationship with, but also friends. Are there good friends? Sometimes you go to college and you do bad things with bad people. Your mother used to always say, mother, father, you want to make straight A's, hang around straight A students. Find out what they're doing different. You want to feel good about yourself, hang around positive people or people that you can help bring up. So we'll get to that. But I want to come back to this issue of boundaries. And maybe, Diana, you can start it off by saying something like that, because in studying women's studies, as I have as well, you can't study women without studying men. And when we talk about abuse and being able to have boundaries, what I've noticed in my studies and my research, and what I've noticed also just out in the area of all campuses in the community, men do not feel or know that they have a right to their own bodies. Men don't have boundaries. It's almost wimpy. It's almost weak to say, I don't feel like doing anything today, because of their masculinity that is actually being developed and saying, yeah, you should. And you should not only do this person, but you should do that other person on Wednesday and that other person on Friday. Not only is this being done on college campuses, but it's being reinforced in the media messages that are out there that are showing young people on programs who actually encourage and reward promiscuous behavior. Of course, I'm making hasty generalization, but for the sake of this topic and this conversation, there really aren't a lot of good examples necessarily. Real examples of college, and correct me if I'm wrong, college characters, college ages, forming and developing healthy relationships in the media, around in your peer counseling, peer group. So, especially with men, okay, is it wrong to encourage men to say your body's your own too, that you don't have to do things? And we're not even talking about rape and molestation of men. That's another aspect. So let's talk a little bit about the masculinity and issues that we find with that when it comes to sexual abuse and unhealthy relationships. And then, Diana, I'm going to let you start off, and then I know that Aaron and Katie probably want to say something as well. Go ahead.
I think that we should encourage men to realize their boundaries, and there is a view of this masculinity and that it could be perceived as weak to have boundaries and to say no to things. But I think that it is definitely needed to have boundaries, even as a man. It's kind of goes along the line with self-respect if you have boundaries, because you know your body, you know what you're comfortable with, and to respect your body, you really gotta make yourself comfortable. You really gotta tell others what makes you comfortable. And I think that it should be encouraged more in the media, and it wouldn't be seen as such a negative thing if the media put it out there as a positive.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great point. Aaron and Katie, I would also say that just probably in the last 4 or 5 months, I ran by an individual who I did not know. And I was down at the local establishment, one of the local establishments here in Charleston. Long story short, he said he was in an abusive relationship. And he showed me scars and that sort of thing. And I had never met this person before. But I want to say that I was so, so relieved to have a program like Hope and Sacus to turn to. Yeah. Because the only thing I could do was look in the yellow pages or go to the book and actually find something. Those were the two that stood out. So it's a much needed, valuable service, and I'm glad that we're putting it out there of how to, for men and women to get help who are ashamed of. I've seen women abuse men, and I've seen men abuse men. And men are really the silent, I would say silent majority at this time, because until they start reporting it, they could be the majority. I don't really know, and whether it's significant, they're not the silent minority. There are a lot of them out there. They're just so ashamed. It is really very difficult to work in a world, to be in a world of dominance, of the alpha, and come out and say, you know what? She's abusing me. She's hurting my feelings, and she's hitting me with her heels. She takes her shoe off, and she hits me, and she slaps me, and she makes me feel bad, because men, if they turn around and hit them back, we know what's going to happen, and that's not right, and it shouldn't be done. But at the same time, seeing women take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. I have seen it. I don't know them personally, but I've seen it at a club or something where women, they just know the men aren't going to hit them.
Right.
And so they continue to hit them. Mm-hmm. So what about the men who really need help? I mean, other than, you know, calling the telephone hotline, what can men do? It feels weird to say this from women, because sometimes men speak better to men, and they feel that they can understand more, but we're going to give it a shot anyways. Mm-hmm. What would you say to the man who really needs to speak out and be okay with that? I guess as far as maybe gathering with a group or something. Yeah, Katie, you were going
to
say something?
I would say it's not unmanly not to want to be hit. It's very understandable. No one deserves to have themselves be harmed in any way. And I think there is this kind of societal minimizing of, you know, hitting or slapping of men or something. Like, sometimes I'll have to consciously be saying to myself, would I be thinking of this differently if this was a woman telling me this rather than a man, to jog myself out of that, you know, societal bias. But no, men have just as much right to their bodies and to be asserting what's okay with them, how to be treated, you know, both emotionally as well as physically, and how not to be harmed in some way or required to do things that's counter to their values.
Okay.
And contrary to what we see these societal messages saying, abuse is not a gender-specific issue,
okay.
Though it might feel that way. Abuse is abuse, and when you, if you were to call a hotline, or if you were to call our office, or Hope's office, or the counseling center, yes, we have to look at what's a stereotype, or that is set by the media or by our culture. We live in a rape culture, to be perfectly honest. Mm. We see the objectification of women, sexual objectification of women, and we see men in very dominant positions. We see women. We see ads for, you know, cologne, where there's a scantily clad woman with a dog collar, and the leash is being held by what looks like a very powerful male figure. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to take into consideration what is a societal message, and then what's realistic,
okay.
Because so much of what we see in the media, in the programs that we watch in the evening, you know, they're not real life. They're not portraying, you know, the messages in our culture that we would hope that they would.
Mm-hmm.
And that builds up a barrier for someone, especially a male, if they were to be on the receiving end of abuse.
Okay. And also we see a lot of that mimicked in our relationships and our families and our homes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of individuals learn abuse and how to deal with how to be the abuser and accept abuse.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
From how, where they were brought up and what they have been, you know, exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of individuals don't even know they're being abused.
Right.
They don't even know they're being abused.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And sometimes that's why you can't isolate yourself, right? You have to really. So let's talk about the good things. How do you notice something positive and good that's happening in your life, being surrounded by friends or significant others? And because all of them are relationships, and I think all of them can hurt.
Yes.
And help. So let's look at some of the positive here for a moment of what we can do. Not only we're talking about how to get out, but also how do you recognize you're doing okay? And you do. Sometimes we just don't pick good partners or good friends. Sometimes we're just not. We're really bad at it. So how do we know it's a good thing? How do we know it's a good thing?
I I think one characteristic of a healthy relationship is you see it in conflict. You know, sometimes the partners will kind of go to each corner, and the relationship is more about, you know, what can I get from this other person, rather than, you know, and how do I fight for what I want instead, rather than when there's conflict, kind of coming together and trusting that the other person is working with you to try to improve the situation.
Okay.
So I think in our healthier relationships, there's good communication. We don't get as defensive when there's conflict, but instead we can be like, okay, this is where things are at now. We see things differently. How can I understand you? How can you understand me?
Okay. And I like that aspect, because when you think about conflict, then you have to decide. I know a lot of marriages, they weren't all rosy. Mm-hmm. And at the very beginning, even, you know, you go through challenges. It's ebb and flow, right?
Right.
And so how do you know then you have a really great thing and it gets bad and we have challenges? When should I leave and when should I stay?
I always want to say, please do not get engaged before you've had a good fight and you know how each other how each other works through conflict.
Okay, because I want to say that. That's a great point, because research is still showing women come to college to find their husband. It still says that. A lot of women do. They're not ashamed of it. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. But men do the same thing. They're looking for a job, too, as well, but they're also looking for a college-educated woman to have on their arm and things like that. So when you come into college, you're thinking about marriage. You're thinking about kids. You're thinking about also, I'm away from my mom and dad. I totally have control over myself. I can go out and drink as long as I want, have a great time, do drugs or whatever, or not do any of those things, work out all the time or whatever. But again, it's a breeding ground of how do you, you know, peer pressure is huge, okay? And good people drink, you know, it's not a big deal, you know, it's not for everyone. But at the same time, when you're trying to have these great relationships, a lot of decisions are made under the influence, good and bad decisions. And it's very difficult to deal with that. I think about whether there needs to be some type of outreach that actually goes into the campus, into the classes, where it's so prevalent, where people can kind of monitor themselves when they know they're doing wrong. And I don't even know if that's our responsibility. I mean, because part of college is growing up and making good and bad decisions. So, go ahead. Katie, were you going to say something?
I think it's important to be looking out for each other, too. I think that's way to be kind of keeping an eye on what's healthy. You know, you can have more of a sense of that way. I often work with people who haven't always had a role model for what a healthy relationship is. So just kind of having discussions, even with friends, of what they think would be help. Like, what do they think is more healthy? What's not as healthy?
Okay.
When we're talking a bit about more casual relationships, what I think is very important is for you and your partner to be on the same baseline of, you know, is this casual or is this serious? Because I think sometimes one person might want casual, the other person might be wanting more serious, and that usually is a hard thing to navigate, because one or the other isn't going to be happy.
Okay. And it's good to also have that type of role model set up on college campuses. Erin, yes.
I was going to say, beyond that, too, valuing the things that are important to your partner is also an important aspect of the healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have any respect for the things that are important to them, then that would make that would take away from the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are supportive and respectful of the things that are important to your partner, as well as the things that are important to you, and you can establish what's important to you, mm-hmm. and you can be on the same wavelength. Again, as Katie said, communication is key, especially when you are establishing a relationship,
mm-hmm.
so that you identify the boundaries of your relationship, what you're looking for, so that you're on the same page. When that's a gray area, that's a breeding ground for heartache or disappointment,
mm-hmm.
Because you're in different places.
Okay. And is it, Diana, did you want to say?
Yeah.
That? Okay, go ahead.
Also, on a college campus, I think that trust is a big element of a healthy relationship, because it has to go both ways. Like, not one person can't trust the other without the other one trusting them. And on a college campus, there is, like you said, drinking and stuff like that. And if you can't go out, like, on your own without that person trusting you, Like, there really needs to be that trust in there for a healthy relationship.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Let me be on the other side. It's college. Mm-hmm. You know, should we really even be worried about relationships now? We have our whole lives ahead of us. Should I really worry about that? Why is it so important to think about this now in the next 4 years? I have class to worry about. I have extracurricular activities or sport or a job. I'm working 2-3 jobs. You know, if I can just have a relationship just to have fun, good or bad, it's not going to hurt the person. One bad night, it's not going to hurt, you know. Why worry about this now? Why can't I just forget even having a relationship during college? I got the rest of my life. Why do I even want to work with learning how to have interpersonal communication skills or relationship skills? Some people have great communication skills, but no relationship skills, I guess. Why is it important? Are we worried about it at a two? I mean, should we worry about that after we graduate and get the job and we get a little older and more mature? Why is it important to talk about this now on a college campus? Why do we need to have this type of conversation now and talk about individuals from the years of 18 or 17 to 22 years old or there beyond? Why is it so important for this?
Well, I would say if you're looking at ages in which unhealthy relationships or abuse occurs, sexual assault, those kinds of things. The highest rate of assault, sexual assault, comes between the ages of 18 and 24 or 26. And so this is when the abuse is starting to happen. This is when people are meeting new people. They're being forced into a situation in which they're trusting people from all over the state, maybe all over the country or the world, really. They've never had any experience with them. They don't know their background. So they're tossed into a situation where they're being forced to build relationships with people from different backgrounds, okay, people from different areas. And so I think it's important, because if not now, then when?
Right.
Then graduation occurs, then you have the work, you're forced into the field of work, and then you're in a relationship and have no experience, have no knowledge base. You're learning a whole lot of things in college. Mm-hmm. Let's add this to the list.
Okay. And we know that even when I study leadership and power structures, that research has shown that individuals, their brain and all their activities are still permeable and develop up to the age of 25, where it can really have some influence as far as that. But I'm going to ask you, Diana, why now? Why important? I'm going to ask you the same question. I'd like for you to take a stab at that. Why is it important for individuals of your age group, outside of the research, just from a human aspect, an emotional aspect, why do you think it's important to talk about this right now?
I think it's important to talk about this because there are relationships out there right now, and people might not understand it, and they're trying to learn what a relationship is and how to work in a relationship. And so I think conversations like these are important because of those people that are out there in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
When
you were talking about the relationship, and also one of the things I think you're alluding to is the fact that when you talk about peers, and we were talking about get out, you know, it's bad. It's really important to understand the relationship, because you also find out where your self-esteem is.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to bullying, when it comes to things along those lines, a lot of issues, a lot of people don't get out of these relationships because they really don't have any self-value. They don't have any self-esteem. Have you seen in your research or in your literature that you've been looking at and reading during your 4 years, or even in your experience of what you've seen observation-wise, a lot of women have low self-esteem, so they stay in these bad relationships and they start having sex at an age where they don't want to, but they want to be accepted. Acceptance, being in the in-group, is huge during the college years. And also men do things, terrible things, because they're pressured into doing it from their peers, from the whole aspect of masculinity. So what would you say about this self-esteem and self-value? Would you find relevance that it's important during this period of time? Is this the time now to develop your self-esteem and self-value and confidence before you leave college? What would you say about that?
I think it is, because if you don't have any self-esteem right now, I think college is a perfect time to build it, because when you get out there into the workforce, you're going to need that self-esteem to succeed. And I think college is the perfect opportunity to try to find your self-worth and your self-values. And relationships can help that, or mm-hmm. they can also hurt it.
Okay.
And I think that relationships are... they can be a good way to try and build up your self-esteem, as long as you're in a healthy relationship.
Okay. And so it's very, now's the time to build it up and get it stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get out there, there's even more pressure. And people who have been doing it longer than you, people who have been positive forces longer than you, and negative as well longer than you. So you have to kind of get all that together. So we know feeling good about ourselves is a great signal that you're doing the right thing, you're in a good relationship, you really feel good about yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing great things. You don't feel good about yourself for doing wrong things and continuing that, but you feel good about yourself, so you feel respected. You have respect over your body. No one's asking you to do something that you don't want to do. That's men and women. That you're using your body the way that you want it used, if you want to use it at all. Because I know a lot of the individuals, I've run into a lot of women and men who are closet virgins, for instance, and they don't want to tell anybody because that's not what's really trendy right now to be that. I think there needs to be more. I think the spire of silence has to be broken. I think people have to come out and even if you're in the minority, say these things, because that's what you believe in. You're not hurting anyone. But also we have to look at the issue of alcohol and drugs, and that this is a time for experimentation, and you can decide on what you want to do, but also know that it can cloud your judgment for anyone who partakes in any of that. So it really is about, with it all being said, self-respect, mutual respect, about balance of power that you've talked about the equality of power. And things along those lines. And the self-esteem and self-value, right? Okay. So we've talked about, you know, getting out. What the signals are when they're, it's not good for you. How you can get out. And when it feels good. And as far as friends feeling good, you have to have friends to support you. Okay. So we're coming at the end of our hour. And if you had something to tell an individual, besides, you know, the people who are great role models, get out there and show us how it's done and be a part of it and kind of, and a lot of times couples get into this thing where the only couples can be invited. So even on college, and maybe that's not the best way, because you have to invite young, you know, single people also to be around that positive vibe too and do that and kind of connect with that, the positivity of all of that. But for the final word, let's look at, what is the last thing that you want to sell someone at the end of the show that you don't want them to forget, and to keep that in mind? Okay, so we'll start with anyone. We'll just go right down the line, and let me know. And just talk to the audience member that's out there listening right now. Katie?
I would say that for healthy relationships, it's really a choice you're making to be in the relationship. It's not a need you have to be in the relationship. And I would definitely encourage you, as healthy or unhealthy as your relationship is, make sure you're building up your own interests, your own friends, because that will help you be living a full life and be having more supports when things are harder between you and your partner.
Okay. Thank you, Katie. Thank you so much.
I would say balance within the relationship is key, because the unhealthy aspects and characteristics are sort of supported with the imbalance of power or imbalance of equality within the relationship. And also to be aware of how the media plays into, or maybe stereotypes or roles within our society play into the presence of your relationship. Are you basing your relationship off of these unfair stereotypes, unfair characteristics that are portrayed within the media? And if that's the case, if it doesn't feel right, to really trust your instincts. They're there for a reason.
Okay,
okay,
very good. Diana, you'll have the last final word.
I would say if you're in a relationship, evaluate your relationship and try to distinguish if it's a healthy or unhealthy relationship. And if you feel even a little bit negative in your relationship, try to talk it out and try to really see what will work out for you. And it should be in your interest and not anyone else's.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I have some great news to tell you. I want to first, before I close up the show, I want to first thank my senior psychology women's studies major and minor. I want to thank Diana Marie Hernandez for being on the show today. Thank you so much for your perspective.
You're welcome.
And I also want to thank Erin Walters, the executive director of the Sexual Assault Counseling and Information Service, known as SACIS. Erin, thank you for being
with
us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Katie McCarthy, an assistant director of EIU Counseling Center, her fourth year here at Eastern. She also coordinates the EIU Sexual Assault Prevention Task Force. Katie, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
I want to thank you so much for coming because this is such an important issue, such an important topic that we cannot stop talking about it. And we can't always talk about it behind closed doors in sessions. We have to say, it's okay, come out. You know, we're going to support you. Other people will support you. And just don't be afraid to come out. So with that in mind, I just want to tell you a couple of things. One is that I'm starting a theoretical teeing company for students. And I'm happy to say that my producer, Ethan Kruger, is going to have a big role in playing in that. And also Valerie Badillo and other students are going to come out. And you're going to be able to talk to them one-on-one and be on the show. So I'm really excited about that. And one of the first shows, we're going to be talking about bullying. And we're going to be talking about sexual assault. And we're going to start it in April because April is also the sexual awareness. We have a sexual awareness week or month.
Sexual assault awareness month.
Awareness
the entire month.
So perfect, perfect. So we'll be able to talk about that. We'll be able to get that on the line as well. And finally, I want to, for all of you, get a pencil and paper out. I'm going to tell you right now, for SACIS, the number is 1-888-1888. Yes. 345-2846 and 348-5033. And for Eastern Illinois Hotline, which I didn't know, and I'm glad we have it here today, is 217-549-6483 and 581-3413. I'm going to ask my producer to put those numbers up where you can find this show on Theoretical Tea and Company at WEIU Hitmix 88.9 in the archive. As usual, I want to thank everybody for coming today and listening to the show today. And as usual, I would like to dedicate this show, as I do every show. Today, I want to dedicate this show to the individual and the individuals who are and who is in an unhealthy relationship. We wish you and hope that you have the courage to get out, because the bottom line is that you are definitely worth it. Have a great afternoon, everyone. Thanks again for joining me, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to Theoretical Tea and Company. Please join us next time for another sip of knowledge right here on Hitmix 88.9 WEIU, here for you.